On the phone with me is our lone representative to the United States Congress, Representative Cynthia Lummis. Cynthia, it's good to have you on with us this morning.
Oh, it's great to join you, Dave. Thanks. I'm sorry I couldn't join you earlier in the morning. We had the big U-cut item on the floor this morning.
That's what I understand. Yeah, they're doing your real job, so I certainly can appreciate that, and, you know, that always needs to take precedence over being on the radio. So we can get you on anytime you're available, but these kind of things, you're on a timetable, and I understand. How did that come out with that discussion, by the way?
We're going to have an actual vote this afternoon, but the debate occurred this morning. What we've been doing in the Republican conference is putting up pieces of legislation that Republicans have proposed that have not gotten a hearing in committee and not been able to make it to the floor, and letting the American people decide what they think are some of the most important priorities. A bill that I have sponsored won the U-cut vote of the American people this week, so we're attempting to attach it to another bill on small business. And that was what I was handling on the floor this morning. And the bill that I am sponsoring is called the Federal Workforce Reduction Act. What it does is for every two civilian employees that leave the federal workforce, only one would be hired to replace them. So it reduces the size of the federal employment base by attrition only. Nobody gets fired. Nobody gets laid off. If someone retires or moves to another position, thereby vacating that position, only one person would be rehired to fill every two vacant positions.
That, to me, is a wonderful approach to shrinking government, number one. And number two, over time, saving money and being able to apply that back to the deficit. Of course, the deficit, right now, a big priority.
Huge priority. And this bill would save $35 billion over 10 years. And it would take us back to pre-President Obama employment levels. The federal government has grown 15% in terms of employees since President Obama took office. That's 188,000 employees. Next year, going to 230,000 and even more once Obamacare hires those 16,000 IRS agents to make sure that every American has government-approved health insurance. So what we're trying to do is say, look, the private sector is hurting. The private sector is the only ones that really creates net new jobs and growth in our economy that gives us an economy that lasts. So let's not take money away from private people to expand an ever-bloated federal government. Let's leave money in the pockets of the American people.
Absolutely. Along those lines, there's been a great deal in the news about congressional action, or lack thereof, depending on who you listen to, on allowing the Bush tax cuts to expire at the end of the year, thereby giving us all a huge tax increase come January 1. And, of course, the Democrats threw in the little stone under the saddle there in terms of, oh, but that's, we're okay with extending that, but not for people who make $250,000 or more. What the problem with that is, that's most entrepreneurs in this country.
It absolutely is, Dave. Two-thirds of the net new jobs in this country are created by small businesses and entrepreneurs. Most of them are organized as subchapter S corporations or as partnerships or limited liability companies. What that means is that their business income is passed through to their individual income tax reports. So though it may look like their individual income is over $250,000 per couple, that is including business income attributed to them, business income that they could use if they weren't paying taxes on it to create jobs, to grow their business, to expand their facilities, And to the extent that we are taking money away from those people with higher taxes, we really are crowding out in private investment in our economy.
And whoever thinks that it's a good idea to raise taxes in a recession needs to have their head examined.
And you know, the Japanese would tell us that, Dave, because back in the decade of the 1990s, the Japanese raised taxes during their recession, and it extended their recession for an entire decade. We need to take a lesson from them. We need to get our tax and spending situation so it benefits the private economy. Now, the way we do that is we extend the current tax policies and we cut federal spending. That's the answer.
Cut federal spending. I like those words. If we can just get that put in action, I think we'll begin to make headway on a lot of areas, Cynthia.
And that is part of our pledge to America. Just this morning, John Boehner, Eric Cantor, Kevin McCarthy, Paul Ryan are rolling out the Pledge to America, our governing document that the Republican Conference has put together after listening to the American people through the America Speaking Out effort that we've had going all of this year. And it is taking what we started to learn last August when people came to our town hall meetings and adding to it the information we've gathered in the last year to come up with a governing agenda. And Dave, if I could, let me read you a statement that I think is really profound that is in the preamble to this governing document.
Absolutely.
It says this: in a self-governing society, the only bulwark against the power of the state is the consent of the governed. And regarding the policies of the current government, the governed do not consent. I think those are powerful words that reflect the fact that during the last year and more, we've been hearing from the American people, all of our constituents, Democrats, Republicans, independents alike, saying we don't want the type of health care reform that is being proposed here. We don't want cap and tax, the largest tax increase that would ever be foisted on the American people. We don't want a stimulus package that does not create private sector jobs, that does not involve infrastructure spending. We don't want programs that bail out Wall Street firms. And yet those are the programs that the federal government has chosen to institute. So the governing document could start today. We are proposing it to Nancy Pelosi today. We're saying, let's not wait. Let's not wait till November 2nd or January 1st. Let's go with this agenda right now and show the American people that we are going to turn this economy around, concentrate on small businesses, entrepreneurs, and the jobs in our district.
Well, and to further on, quote from that same preamble, I think it's real important because you and I've talked about this problem so many times, Cynthia, when you've been on with us before. And I quote, an arrogant and out-of-touch government of self-appointed elites makes decisions, issues mandates, and enacts laws without accepting or requesting the input of the many.
Dave, you're so right. I didn't know you had it in front of you. You do. So you've seen what we're pledging.
Absolutely.
We're pledging to honor the Constitution, particularly the 10th Amendment. We're going to advance policies that promote greater liberty. We're going to honor families. We're going to pledge to make government more transparent and uphold the purpose and promise of a better America. Now, there are many, I'm going to sign this pledge today, and in the details are many of the specific provisions that we intend to pursue today, not waiting until January, not waiting until the outcome of the election in November. We want to start today.
There is a provision in there, too, And I know this has been close to Senator Enzi's heart because he has pushed for this before. And I know you certainly agree that it says that with the polls showing voters disenchanted with Obama, worried about the economy, and mad at the elected officials, the pledge, the agenda also vows to change the way Congress works, requiring every bill to cite its constitutional authority, for example, and to be made public for 3 days before the vote. What a concept.
Yeah, and an absolutely necessary concept. You may recall that when the House voted on that cap and trade bill, what I call the cap and tax bill, last year, we had like 200 pages of amendments come out at 3 a.m., and we were voting on that bill less than 12 hours later. That's no way to run the country.
No.
And the people of America, and rightfully so, have said we don't consent to be governed that way, and we intend to reform that. That's one of the things that a lot of people that I talk to say, you know, why are you going to elect John Boehner Speaker? He is, he's been around for a long time, which indeed he has. And my answer to that is I'm absolutely convinced that he's a reformer, that he wants to reform Congress. He's been kind of a maverick in the past. He got kicked out of the leadership in the late 1990s because he was rattling for real change at a time when the Republican Party didn't want real change. They were embedded in the old practices of hanging earmarks on bills at the last minute that nobody'd read and bringing goodies back to their districts at the expense of the taxpayers. And Boehner was trying to stop that then. He will stop it now. This guy is really devoted to the types of reforms that Congress needs in order to make it more transparent and friendly to the American people, the people who elected us.
More and more and more whenever we have an open line discussion, and I know you've heard some of this from some of our callers when you've been on the air with us before here in studio. I have callers saying in response to some of the things being proposed in Washington, where in the Constitution does it say the federal government has the right to do this? Healthcare reform, classic example.
Indeed. And talk last night among Republicans as we were preparing to roll out our plan was, we can't just use the Article 1, Section 8 provisions that give the federal government broad governing powers. If we're going to really make this stick, we need to be very specific. If we're going to cite the Commerce Clause, we need to use specific case law interpreting the Commerce Clause that would allow us to do that, not just take this broadly expansive approach to the Commerce Clause that renders the Constitution meaningless in terms of its intent to restrict the federal government's role.
Well, and the polls now showing the huge majorities fed up with Congress, both parties, and show Republicans really do have a chance to earn the public's trust back again on these key issues. But the latest an example, Cynthia, the latest, and I'm sure you may have seen this, the AP GFK poll found nearly three-quarters disapprove of the way Congress is handling its job.
Yeah, and they should. And it is offensive to those of us who are here, both Republicans and rank-and-file Democrats alike, who've seen legislation bypass committee, go straight to the Rules Committee, where Nancy Pelosi has her hand-picked members, come out of the committee without the ability to either amend the bill or having only a couple of hand-picked Pelosi amendments come to the floor. That's not how we legislate. Do you know that the entire time I've been here, there has never been an open rule on a bill on the floor of the House, which means no bills have come to the floor allowing unrestricted amendments. That's unheard of. No one I've talked to who is in this Congress now, some of whom have been here for 30 years, have ever seen an entire session where there were no open rules. This is such an extreme departure from the way business has been done around here for decades there are a lot of people offended, including the American people. So reforming Congress is very much on the minds of people. Yes, it's about jobs and the economy, the debt and the deficit. Absolutely. That's where my focus is as well. But the only way we can really legitimately address those issues is by reforming Congress.
Yeah, it has to start there. And we have to have people serving us, like yourself, Cynthia, who, when you tell us you're going to do something, we can take it to the bank. And when you tell us something, we know you're telling us the truth. I said this morning when we were talking about this contract that John Boehner was talking about in the news a minute ago that you and I were just discussing, it would be so refreshing to just have our elected officials tell us the truth. We can handle the truth. And I think we've been lied to so much, and especially in the last year and leading up to that year, that people are skeptical of government in general right now. We're all becoming Missourians saying, show us, and then we'll believe you.
Yeah, and that's the intention that John Boehner's speakership and a Republican majority would bring about.
Absolutely.
Is that kind of transparency that you're asking for, that we're all asking for, even as a member of Congress I'm asking for. I want to read these bills. The fact that, 2,000-plus page bills come to the floor that we don't have time to read, we've never seen before, that have been negotiated behind closed doors, is tremendously frustrating. And, even Democrats are frustrated, and it's not just freshmen. It's Democrats who've been around here for a long time who saw the president get together with a bunch of groups at the White House and cut deals at the White House before pieces of legislation were even presented here in Congress. And they're saying, you're asking too much of us. We represent our constituents. We don't represent the unions only. AMA only when it comes to medical issues. Most physicians don't belong to the AMA. Most of the doctors in the AMA work for the government, or they work for think tanks, or they work for research institutions. They aren't private practice medical doctors. Private practice medical doctors opposed Obamacare, but they didn't have a seat at the table. It's 2 years of too much government, and Americans are pushing back, and thank God for that.
Let's take a listener call. You're on with Representative Lummis in the Morning Zone.
Yeah, I was just wondering if that bill to preserve Heart Mountain, where the Japanese were interned, and one of the greatest injustices done by this country. I wonder how that bill is progressing and how it's justified in the Constitution.
Okay.
And also, I wonder how in the Constitution the justification for a 200-passenger plane is awarded to Nancy Pelosi, and how some of our congressmen are given a Gulfstream jet to fly around the country on.
Well, we'll let her answer that let you listen on the air, because we're almost out of time here, and I want to give her a chance to answer your questions. Thanks for your call.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Cynthia.
The Japanese internment camp bill has passed the House. That is a bill that was requested by the group that has worked, a private sector, nonprofit group with a foundation that has worked to preserve that site, that would donate that site to the National Park Service if the National Park Service chooses to take it. Most of that land is already federal land. It's already BLM land, but there is a very small chunk that belongs to this private group that would donate it to the federal government. So that's why I was comfortable sponsoring that bill. Most of the land already belongs to the BLM. The remainder that doesn't would be donated to the federal government, not having to be purchased by the taxpayers with taxpayer dollars. So that's the reason I was very comfortable sponsoring that bill. It is passed the House and it is in the Senate. With regard to Nancy Pelosi's plane, she is number three in line to become president. That's the role of the speaker in the order of succession. However, the size of the plane, the cost of the plane by a person who supported cap and trade, that is a jet fuel guzzling thing. She does not need a plane that big. I'm not going to argue that it's appropriate for the Speaker of the House to have access to a plane. But for her to have a designated plane of that size for her own personal use alone, to me, is over the top. It's an example of the kind of elitism that you referred to, Dave, in the portion of the pledge that you quoted.
Exactly.
This is the governing class. These are elitists putting themselves above the American people. I fly home every weekend. Mm-hmm. I fly on Frontier Airlines. They don't have a first-class cabin. I fly on their Classic Plus plan and, with everybody else.
Sure.
So does Mike Enzi, because we frequently take the same flights. Mm-hmm. So you're seeing a very different mode of behavior by Nancy Pelosi than you see by our United States Senator Mike Enzi and myself. And, I'm not saying the Speaker needs to fly in economy planes with no first class. I don't begrudge her first class, and I don't begrudge her access to a little military jet or a small plane. But the gentleman caller is correct that I think she's in a 757.
Mm-hmm. Learjet would do the same thing.
Exactly right, Dave. And she doesn't need to have a 757. That's ridiculous. That's over the top. That's too much government.
Cynthia, we're out of time, but I thank you so much for being on the program with us this morning and updating us on all these important issues. I thank you, and God bless you for the good work you're doing out there. Keep it up.
Thanks so much, Dave, and I look forward to seeing you when our October work period begins. Excellent. I'll be campaigning, and I'm just so looking forward to coming and visiting with you further. I'll tell you about my conversation with Bob Schieffer that I had this morning when I come in to talk to you later. We'll have fun with that one.
I'd love it.